We are not half bad, and this is the second episode of the second season. Congratulations to us for making it this far.
What ratings we get.
What rating? There are no podcast ratings. There's just love and appreciation and people who comment.
Subscribe. Download.
Yes, that's right. Subscribe on iTunes. Download it. Listen to it on the sites and make comments. You know, tell us that you like it. We love your feedback.
I'm Dave from On the Banks, the Rutgers blog, covering Rutgers basketball, coincidentally.
And this is Norman of Rumble in the Garden, the St. John's blog, covering St. John's basketball, incidentally. And we are not half bad. Today we're increasing in our excitement about the beginning of the college basketball season. There's a lot of hope, I think, for both teams.
And
a lot of potential for both teams, and a lot of places where things could go
horribly, horribly wrong.
The beginning of practice officially was yesterday.
Rutgers. Friday. There were pictures and videos. Oh, it was so exciting.
Okay, the beginning of practice was Friday, because I don't remember that it's Sunday. So the beginning of practice was Friday for Rutgers. St. John's, I think, will start around today. Because of their European trip, they have the 10 practices that they use to prepare for the European trip are then taken away from this new stretch of practice time between now and the first day and the first game for the team in November.
Oh, is that how it works?
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, interesting. So they practice 10 times, so they can only practice 20 times over the 42 days?
Yes.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's not a bad thing. I think it just means more days off. And yeah. I think a lot of when you think about what a college basketball full practice is, you know, there are a lot of things that teams can do to help install their offense. And this isn't a team that's entirely new. This is a team that's mostly
true.
Played together. There's, 90% of the minutes are returning. Only Amir Garrett has left. And there's some guys that they're working into new positions. But these guys have scrimmaged all summer. Yeah. They played in Europe. They played 5 competitive games. And I don't know that they necessarily need more time to install what it is that they're going to do. But, there's reading between games. There's individual skill practice that they'll be doing. But so you say that there are pictures from Rutgers. Tell me about these pictures. Where they did they look awesome?
It looked exciting. They practiced not at the rec because they're putting up the new scoreboard, new Jumbotron and speakers and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So they practiced at the Barn, which is the old gym where Eddie Jordan used to play when they went to the Final Four.
Tell me about the Barn.
The Barn is basically a high school gym.
Kind of like a barn?
On a college campus, yeah. If you see footage, and there's not much of it, of the old 1976 team, they said the place used to get so loud that paint chips would fall from the ceiling onto the court.
So you're saying that they upgraded from that place to the rack, which is
in 1977,
which is known to be kind of a substandard, overly loud facility. Way to go, Rutgers!
Hey, well, it was state of the art in 77 or 78, whenever it was the rack opened.
And you mean it even used steel beams? Sexy!
In the 70s, that was big. Come on, the Nets played there.
Oh well, then it must have been high class.
They're upgrading the rack. As we speak, they're trying to add to it. They're putting in a new Jumbotron, and stuff like that. So they practice at the Barn. Eddie sounded, and the players sounded excited to be back on the court. But what coach doesn't? So practice started, and JJ Moore is eligible. The cliffhanger from last week.
That is amazing. I congratulations to Rutgers for getting JJ Moore eligible. I mean, he's going to be, at 6'6" and with a bit of experience, especially in the Big East, I think he's going to be a big piece.
I think so too. I think he brings balance to that lineup and a third, hopefully a third scorer to go along with Seegers and Mack, and maybe Kadeem Jack, who's apparently everybody's saying is the most improved player on the team. So
interesting. Now
that's four positions.
We were talking a little bit earlier over text message about the Blue Ribbon preview, which is, for people who don't know, the Blue Ribbon Yearbook is basically the gold standard. It's a thing that a lot of media people and interested fans read, and it has an extensive preview for every single team, even, you know, the low-level teams that you barely heard of, you know, for the Elons, for example.
Yeah.
And the Winthrops. And a lot, and for each team, there's a reporter that goes and speaks to the head coach and gets information on every single player, talks to them about how the players will fit into the new team and the new scheme, and tells you a little bit of the preseason story of the squad.
It answered a lot of interesting questions for me that I hadn't seen anywhere else in the press about what Jordan wants to do with his offense.
Mm-hmm.
And how good junior college point guard Devon Campbell, mm-hmm. with the apostrophe, is
Devon
Campbell. Is that how good he's expected to be? He's apparently the best distributor on the team, you know? So I found it a very interesting read. And you pointed out that the article said that they don't expect Moore to score much, which I think is really surprising.
Well, it's interesting because if you know, when you get into reading enough of these, I suppose, over the years, you know what, there's a certain kind of coded language that you start to understand. And sometimes, you know, different coaches use it differently. You know, there are definitely coaches who, you know, exactly what Jim Boeheim is saying when, you know, he's not saying something or when he is saying something. And I don't know, Eddie Jordan, mm-hmm. I don't know his ways, but... You know, the line that really stuck out to me, and this usually doesn't come just off the cuff. This usually comes from a conversation with the coach. There's a line about how although Moore isn't going to dazzle with his offensive prowess, his intangibles, experience, and familiarity with the work necessary to be successful. You know what that sounds like? That sounds like Mike Poole Light. That sounds like a guy that you have for his hustle and toughness and because he yells at guys in practice. Not because you put him on the court and he's like, y'all need some buckets, I'm going to get you some buckets, which is really interesting.
I think so, too. It kind of surprised me. I mean, because Moore, by all accounts, is a better player than your example, Mike Poole.
Mm-hmm.
And
we love Mike Poole, by the way. He's from Rosedale.
I like Mike Poole, too. Wish he had stayed. A lot of the media reports on Moore is how much leadership he's brought and been there, done that. It's not been about that. Scoring coming from the coach. And, you know, J.J. Moore didn't score much. He averaged 8 points last year coming off the bench, but he only played 18 minutes a game or less. So he was considered to be pretty efficient, and given more time, a lot of people kind of expect more baskets out of him. But Jordan seems to be tempering that a little bit, which surprised me.
Which is interesting. And, you know, one wonders also reading through this, what the front court's going to look like. You know, there are obviously questions about Wally Judge and about Kadeem Jack and his propensity to drip from the basket and from the, you know, from the tough post play.
Yeah.
So that's kind of interesting too.
I think so too. I think he's trying to get Judge. He's going to play Judge. This surprised me at center, as opposed to power forward, and switch Jack over to the power forward position. And I think what he wants to do is to keep Judge from drifting away from the basket.
Good idea.
You know, I think he realizes that Judge is best when he posts up and then at worst steps out to take a jumper. It says in the Blue Ribbon, a jumper from the free throw line,
mm-hmm.
you know. So I think that's why he's challenging Jack to work on his jump shot, because Jack has shown a little bit of a touch, you know, just inside the 3-point line last year.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he's flipping the positions to keep Judge closer to the basket.
Yeah.
So I don't, reading that Blue Ribbon completely changed some of my expectations for this team, position wise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not seeing much of the Princeton offense. You know,
which is also very interesting. You know, hearing him talk about basically players' versatility and switchability over, you know, the concept of the Princeton, you know, the backdoor cuts and that sort of efficient spacing.
Yeah, he just wants them to play, and that kind of stunned me. I think everybody kind of expected to see Eddie Jordan and an Eddie Jordan offense be, you know, this precise, well-played, sharp offense that gets easy baskets and leads to open threes, and it seems like he's going to allow for a lot more freelancing.
Mm-hmm.
Which,
I mean, maybe
interesting to watch.
Mm-hmm. That might also be a function of just the way that the team looks right now and the talent that's on the team.
Yeah, I agree. I think the way Jordan's recruiting lends more towards players who would fit in that Princeton offense type where there's a lot of interchangeability. It seems like everybody he's recruited can play wing and either power forward or guard. So he'll have five wings out there, you know what I mean? And a point guard, four wings and a point guard out there. Mm-hmm. So I think he wants to get to that Princeton offense, but I think he knows that won't be a strength of this team. This team needs to score. So whatever he can do to accentuate that would be good. But I also wonder when this interview took place, because Moore and Okoro weren't eligible yet.
Yeah.
And what he said about Junior Itu, did you read that part?
I did, yes.
How much he expects from Itu, assuming Itu's able to play. That still hasn't been decided yet. Another cliffhanger.
Mm-hmm.
How much he expects from him to the point where he might be the first player off the bench.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that surprises me. Yeah, sounds like he can hit the three. He can rebound. What do you think? What did you think reading it?
I think it's good to get both Jack and Wally Judge closer to the basket. Both of them, according in Big East play, took upwards of 47% of their shots from the mid range, which is really interesting for two pretty big guys. You know, Kadeem Jack actually took 50% of his shots, then inside, and he didn't take any threes. Wally Judge took like one three, but those are guys that you'd love to see them working on tip ins and working on dunks. You want to see them getting at the rim. Getting layups, getting chances to get fouled.
Yeah, and I think Judge is a terrible free throw shooter, but...
This is true, but neither of them gets to the line in any sort of spectacular sort of way. Kadeem Jack gets to the line 24% of his shots. That's terrible for a big man.
Yeah.
Wally Judge gets there about 40% of the time. That's okay, but it's not great.
You need those easy baskets, the potential for easy baskets, and the big men need to do that. They can't be stepping out every possession. Yeah.
And you have to start getting people in the foul trouble. That's that's just good basketball.
But what did Blue Ribbon have to say about St. John's there?
This is finally where St. John's expects to have a versatile, balanced team. There's certainly now an experienced team where you have this very strong defense coming back, including Chris Obekpa. So D'Angelo Harrison is back, and he's back with a new attitude. He has supposedly lost something up to 15, 20 pounds. His scoring is as explosive as ever. In Europe, he had a couple of 30-point games. He certainly, seems like he's the same guy he's always been. He's a dynamic scorer. The real change, I think, this year will be that there are supposedly two very good point guards who might actually complement each other. Jamal Branch being more of a deliberate pick and roll kind of guy, a guy who is toning down his crazy passing, and then Rashid Jordan, who's more of a just go and get it kind of guard.
When you say compliment each other, I picture Rashid Jordan coming in saying, "Why, Jamal, you look very nice today. I like the haircut."
Exactly, and Jamal's like, Rashid, you're looking nice and fit. You're looking very good. I'm enjoying your fashions.
Every time they substitute out for each other, you got to sit through that.
But so Rashid Jordan, Lavin was saying that he feels that Jordan is the kind of guy who's better without a screen than he is with a screen. That he's just the kind of guy that you want him to go up against somebody one-on-one and then, get his. The problem, of course, will be that St. John's will need to score enough from the outside enough to get him into one-on-one situations. Teams know to zone them up. So, that's a concern. But, those two guys, I think, are a real cause for excitement.
I think so, too. It's interesting you say get his about St. John's, because it sounds like there are a lot of guys on that team that want to get theirs.
I don't think that's true, actually. I think that's a perception because there are a lot of highly ranked players. But one of the problems with St. John's in scoring is that a number of the players are offensively unselfish. Chris Obekpa is not an offensive player. Sir Dominic Poynter is a stat sheet filler. He's a rebounder. He's a passer. He's a steals guy.
Mm-hmm.
He creates, And Lavin keeps trying to encourage him to go out and get more of his points. And you'll see that there were times where Sir Dominic Poynter would get the ball near the end of the shot clock, and he wouldn't have anything to do with it, so he'd pass it to somebody else who would take an even worse shot than what he had. So it's one of the places where, you know, Phil Green, for all of his faults, and people do complain about Phil Green sometimes in his play, but Phil Green was never a guy that you had to cajole to go off and get shots. And the way that St. John's runs their offense, which isn't particularly structured much of the time, you need a guy who is offensively aggressive.
Yeah, I think your point about Poynter was interesting, especially after listening to compare it to Rutgers, Jordan talk about how he wants players to know their roles. And if you're a good shooter, but the guy next to you, say Miles, is a better shooter, get it to Miles. You know what I mean? I think that's what Phil Green or Poynter might have to learn. You know, Poynter needs to learn that he's a good enough shooter that he could get his shot. But know what I mean?
Yeah, but he has to work on that too, because definitely sometimes you see him take shots and you're like, yeah, maybe there's a reason you don't shoot that much, you know?
Yeah.
But he does have to have the confidence enough to step into a shot, because the other thing that he does is that he actually draws fouls. You know, he's strong, he's quick, and if he can improve his handle on the drive, he could be a solid offensive piece. He's not going to be anything better than a third scorer, but with everything else he does, that would make him, I don't know about an All-American, but I think that he's a fantastic player. He's, you know, he's tough, he's gritty, he's the heart of things, and he wants to make plays, and he does not give up. You always have to talk about the addition of Orlando Sanchez and Max Hooper, but in a sense, you know, Hooper is a specialist who hopefully will score something around like 5 or 6 points a game, just dropping in, you know, threes for a few minutes.
Right.
And Orlando Sanchez will be, hopefully, a very good rebounder who also helps the whole team gel. I mean, one of the things with Sanchez is that even in junior college, and in practice, people say he's one of the best players, but not because he goes out and he's going to drop 20. They say that because he's the kind of guy who can make a lot of plays. He can get steals. He can run the floor. He can make passes.
Talk a little about one guy that seems to have gone under the radar because he redshirted last year. Talk a little about God's Gift.
God's Gift Achiuwa is a big, strong player. He's got certainly some experience and some age. But I don't think you should expect anything more of him than being a strong bench player. He can rebound, especially on the offensive end, but he's not a particularly gifted scorer depending on the defense. If they're playing against taller teams, I think that he becomes not a liability necessarily, but he struggled to find his offense his first year. And maybe that's different with a team that has different and stronger offensive options. Maybe he becomes a very good pick and roll player. I don't think he's the best finisher, but when you play him against smaller, quicker teams, the DePauls of the world, he can definitely go ham on you. You know, he can definitely drop 13 points, get 6, 7, 8 rebounds. He can be a very good player in those situations. But if you're talking about playing against Syracuse, I think he can give you a few good minutes and he can spell people. And then there's Christian Jones as well, who can be a good, strong player inside when he chooses to be.
Yeah, I think he's an interesting player as well. He was kind of highly touted last year, right?
I think he was overhyped last year. Mm-hmm. Played a little bit early. The word got out to Rothstein that he might be a one-and-done player, which I thought was some excessive hype. I thought that really did him a disservice. There are things that happened. He lost a few close friends during the year. And I think he struggled with that, and he struggled with his confidence. This is a guy who was lightly recruited out of high school, went to IMG Academy, and then ended up on St. John's radar late. I'm sorry, but I think it's very hard for an American player to go that under the radar and be honestly a one-and-done candidate. I think that was crazy hype. I don't think that was necessarily called for. Doesn't mean he's not a good player. I think that he's a guy who needs to marshal his confidence and remember that while a little undersized, he can get up there, he can get rebounds, and when he's attacking, he's a good, vicious hybrid player. He's a kind of a wing forward.
This is Not Half Bad, the Rutgers and St. John's basketball podcast. I'm Dave, and you can find me at onthebanks.com or at Dave_White on Twitter. And you can find Norman at rumbleinthegarden.com or at EcoSpias on Twitter as well. But I think there's one more piece of news we have to talk about.
Okay.
One more. It's St. John's related. I think you need to talk a little bit about the Isaiah Whitehead situation.
The recruitment
of Mr. Whitehead and Kevin Willard pulling it out of his hat.
All right. So this is this is now a week and a half old, but St. John's was interested in Isaiah Whitehead, the 6'4" wing out of Lincoln High School.
Hey, another wing.
Yes, another wing. St. John's and Steve Lavin, he really does love his hybrid wing guard players. I think if he could, he'd play a three-guard lineup.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Whitehead was a highly touted player, and St. John's really wanted to reel him in years ago. But he seemed to wax and wane in his interest. He wanted to go to
Syracuse
was the one that he seemed to call almost his dream school. He had a whole package deal thing going.
Indiana got interested, right?
Yeah, he talked to Indiana. Minnesota was interested with young Patino. And later on in the process, it seemed that Isaiah suddenly, you know, he kept saying, I would love it if St. John's got involved, or he would listen if St. John's got involved. And I guess they put out feelers, and St. John's was like, well, if you're interested, sure, we'd love to have you. So after he'd already seen Seton Hall on an official visit, which, you know, originally sounded like a cursory sort of like, you know, see the local official visit, that would be good. It would be good PR and not like anything where, you know, Isaiah Whitehead would actually go to Seton Hall.
Yeah, I mean, mid-August, one of the recruiting gurus actually tweeted a picture of Kevin Willard being the only coach watching Whitehead play mm-hmm. in one of the AAU competitions.
Mm-hmm.
And it almost seemed funny. It's like, Willard, what are you doing?
And they lost, what's his name? The Crime Stopper, Akil Carr, to Europe. And they lost another guy, the guy from Illinois, because he got caught up in a felony robbery attempt out in Hinsdale, Illinois, which is like one of the nicest, wealthy little neighborhoods, like out in the suburbs, sort of like, what are you doing out there, kid?
It spawned my favorite recruiting hashtag ever, Kevin Willard recruiting pitches.
Yes.
I had a blast with that over the summer.
So Kevin Willard was in a tough spot, and, you know, St. John's had already, you know, was already interested, and Isaiah Whitehead seemed to be interested, and from, you know, what his mom was saying, it seemed like St. John's was going to be the place, and it was just a formality that he was going to announce on Wednesday. And then Seton Hall came back with a kind of a wacky haymaker, where the day of his announcement, you know, it seemed that, you know, you could pretty much write your Isaiah Whitehead to St. John's article, and then some people were saying, not so fast. And then as the morning progressed, it seemed like there were a lot of, no, I think he's going to Seton Hall. And what came out pretty early was that there was some sort of deal to bring on his high school coach, Tiny Morton, who's a longtime high school coach and AAU helper in the New York area. He also coached Lance Stevenson. He coached Sebastian Telfair, coached Eugene Lawrence for a year or two, who went to St. John's. And, yeah, lo and behold, you know, there's Isaiah Whitehead announcing that that he's going to go to Seton Hall. The kids behind him all had Seton Hall shirts on. And Tiny Morton wasn't brought in officially, but, you know, there's very much a nudge, nudge, wink, wink. Oh, yes, I'd love it if he would come to Seton Hall to you know, help me acclimate to things.
Right.
Which was fascinating because
not illegal.
No, it's not illegal. And it's interesting because you already had what seemed like two package deals where Oliver Antigua would come to Seton Hall, and then all of a sudden this player, Angel Delgado, a Dominican forward, comes, and then Fred Hill comes. Jaron Cena decides to commit to Seton Hall. Now, to be fair, Fred Hill and Jaron Cena have never coached each other, so that's not a conflict there.
Yeah, well, Fred Hill and coaching is kind of
oxymoron. Yes. And then Oliver Antigua also hasn't coached Angel Delgado. His twin brother did. So I guess you can get away with that, you know?
Yeah.
And only Tiny Morton and Isaiah Whitehead have a direct contact. it starts getting a little dicey when you have multiple guys who are brought along because they can bring a player. I think Fred Hill is, you know, he's a recruiter in his own right. He's got a lot of contacts. If he moves on, I don't know that Jaren Cena will necessarily move on. Now, if Antigua moves on, or if he's dissatisfied with this situation, then will he move on? That's entirely possible. Tiny Morton needs to have one of the top three spots because he's a coach who is a designated as being associated with a prospect.
Right.
So that means either Antigua or Shaheen Holloway, who's currently on the staff, have to be moved to a director of operations kind of role. Holloway has been with Willard for a long time. I have a hard time believing, and he's a Seton Hall star too. I have a hard time believing he's going to take a demotion. Antigua, will he? He's been a long time recruiter. So I don't know who goes on. And I do think that that's, you know, even if it was the team that I follow, I think that that's a problem. You know, that's, you're playing with a little bit of fire and everybody has to, you know, pull their weight. And I don't know that all those guys can pull their weight. You've got three recruiters on one staff. What does that mean? You know, who's going to help out with the game planning and the coaching?
Right. I mean, especially because I've read articles, and of course now I can't cite them, where it seems that Mr. Morton is fun to deal with. And I wonder what kind of problems he could cause for Willard while on staff. You know what I mean? Because he's going to push for his kid to play. And Whitehead will play. But, you know, it's one of those interesting. There's a lot of ways it could go.
One of the appeals for Whitehead was that he said that Willard saw him as the face of the program, which means that maybe, you know, having a guy like Tiny say, no, my guy's got to play. Oh, he's got to get the ball isolated on the left corner. Even if that's something that Kevin Willard wouldn't normally do, he's already promised he's got to be the face of the program. So it's the same problem anyway, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be interesting to watch it play out. It's nice for Seton Hall right now, but there's a lot. I mean, as we started the show, there's a lot that could be good, and there's a lot that can be bad about it. So.
Sure, and you know that's on them. You know they're going to do their thing, and it's great to see Seton Hall with competitive talent.
Because
I think that Kevin Willard is a very good game coach. I think there are a lot of other aspects that he seems to be lacking in, and he needs maybe some veteran experience with him to chill him out a little bit. That said, I think he does a really good job of getting his guys to take smart shots and to maximize their skill. Because there is not a lot of talent on that team.
No.
And the fact that they were competitive in many of their games despite going 3-15 is a testament to his skill.
Yeah.
You know, these are guys who know to take threes. You know, they do not take mid-range jump shots. They don't take bad shots.
They're going to be interesting to watch over the next 2 years. So, but Willard bought himself an extra year is what seems to have happened there. This has been Not Half Bad, the Rutgers and St. John's basketball podcast. And I am Dave from On the Banks, the Rutgers blog.
And this is Norman from Rumble in the Garden, the St. John's blog.
And thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.